Omaha Public Radio presents another program from Film Streams, Omaha's nonprofit cinema. We'll hear a panel discussion which took place following a screening of the film Praying with Lior, directed by Ilana Trachtman. The film, produced in 2007, is a documentary about 12-year-old Lior Liebling, nicknamed the Little Rebbe. Lior, born with Down syndrome, has spent much of his life praying, leading some to believe he is a spiritual genius. The film follows Lior, whose father is his rabbi, as he approaches his bar mitzvah, the Jewish coming-of-age ceremony, with different characters providing varying glimpses into a life spent praying with Lior. The topic of Down syndrome, including many of the common misconceptions of the condition, has recently come to the forefront with the nomination of Alaska Governor Sarah Palin as Vice President of the United States. This past April, Governor Palin gave birth to a child with Down syndrome. Besides Governor Palin, two congressmen, Pete Sessions of Texas and Kathy McMorris Rogers of Washington State, also have children born with this genetic anomaly. This event, co-sponsored by the National Council of Jewish Women and the Omaha Down Syndrome Parents Network, will be moderated by Rabbi Aryeh Azrael of Temple Israel. The members of the panel include Mary McHale, whose son Daniel recently received his first communion. Mrs. McHale is president of the Omaha Down Syndrome Parents Network. We will also hear from Doug Wolfson, a member of Temple Israel, whose son Avi's bar mitzvah was presided over by Rabbi Azrael. This program was recorded by Omaha Public Radio on Monday evening, August 25, 2008, for broadcast at this time. The opinions expressed are those of the speakers and do not necessarily represent those of Film Streams, Temple Israel, KIOS-FM, or the Omaha Public School District. Here now to introduce the program is Mary McHale.
Thank you, everybody, for coming out here tonight to see what I think is a great documentary. I had the privilege of viewing this film in Boston at the National Down Syndrome Congress, and I hope you enjoy it as much as I do. On behalf of Film Streams, Rabbi Azrael, down here in the front row, the National Council of Jewish Women, and the Omaha Down Syndrome Parents Network, places up in front, just like Temple, down below. We welcome you to tonight's screening of Praying with Lior, and it's a great story about a young man who happens to have Down syndrome and the process and the journey that his family takes so that Lior can participate in all of the rituals and in his faith-filled community and what that means to his family and also what that means to his faith-filled community. I hope you can stay around after the film because we're going to have a panel discussion that will be led by Rabbi Azrael of Temple Israel. Yeah. And Doug Wolfson, who is a member of Rabbi's congregation, and his son Sarah and his son Avi had his bar mitzvah performed at Temple Israel year before? Six years ago. And then if there's any questions that anybody has about what a person is like with Down syndrome, I can talk to what my son is like and some of the characteristics, and, you know, some things are the same and some things are different. And I think that's it. Welcome. Thank you again for coming out on a Monday night.
I want to thank Rachel Jacobson for allowing us to have this presentation here tonight. Mm-hmm. How does one start after watching this? I have a sister in Oxford who has a child with Down syndrome, and this revived all kind of memories from being with him and with the family, and it's hard to. To see this on one hand, because the child is a lot more severe in the way the Down syndrome is expressed. But at the same time, to see those kind of stories invigorates every one of us. And I was sitting next to Doug, which is not easy usually to sit next to him when you watch those kind of movies. And we, what I recalled is an attempt at Temple Israel to have a bar mitzvah for your son. And I recall how hard it was to make sure that at the same time that you provide an occasion of becoming a bar mitzvah, you also want to continue respecting the dignity of the family and especially your son. And also I remember the participation of children, his class, in the event, and again the way they came together, the way they expressed their relationship was powerful. We had to go through different parts of the service on Shabbat morning at Temple Israel and find a way to interpret each of the liturgical rubrics into a presentation through arts, through singing. But the best part was in the Oneg when we saw Avi dancing on Friday night. And then the joy that Avi brought that weekend. And he's still warm and compassionate. And when he is at the temple, I know I can definitely get a hug from him. Not from the rest of the congregation, but from him, it's guaranteed. And it's always brings memories back of that weekend that I will never forget.
When we first thought about having Avi's bar mitzvah, you know, about a year before it, you know, my son is not nonverbal. And, you know, I think what this film reminded me of is that you have to remember that every human being, every child, whether Jewish or non-Jewish, Christian, Muslim, whatever, has a right to do the same things that every other child does. We worked with Temple Israel specifically. I have to mention her. She's not here tonight. Eileen, it was Eileen Cater at the time. It's Eileen, say it for me.
Gannett?
Yes.
Gannett.
Yeah. Gannett. Who worked with Avi week in and week out for 9 months. Mostly on Sundays, who helped develop the artwork and the presentation. And, of course, the rabbi and the cantor and all the professional staff helped, too, that described the prayers in such a way that Avi could present it to the congregation. Because ultimately, that's what a bar mitzvah or a bat mitzvah is all about, is every child presents himself or herself to the congregation just like Leora in the movie did in the way that he could. You know, I heard that statement. What can Avi do? You know, I don't know who it was, and it doesn't really matter, but I heard that statement from people that, you know, we weren't sure. I mean, I admit, my wife and I don't think we were sure how somebody who's almost totally nonverbal, you know, very low IQ, can have a bar mitzvah. I mean, you grow up. especially in a Jewish environment and any other environment for that matter, like they said in the movie, expecting your children to grow up and be able to do whatever they can do and to a high level. And so, you know, we struggled with that. We also made it important that we used the tools that he uses to this day with pictorials. You know, we wrote out his invitation as though he would write it out, like in a school setting. You know, Avi wants you to come, and there was little pictures above every word that describes or a sign. He uses sign to help him communicate. And in the opening pamphlets that people get at a synagogue to describe what portion they're going to read from the Torah, we inserted, with the rabbi's permission, another card that said, you know, I want you to help me throughout my bar mitzvah. And then my wife and I, at the time when it comes at Temple Israel to bless and to say something, to give a speech, so to speak, to your child on the bima, you know, typically you give this long speech about how it's great that you're growing up and how proud we are. You know, we said we loved them using sign. Because it was important for him to understand. It didn't matter what the congregation understood. It was important to us that he understood that it was a special day for him. And I think at the end, when he turned to the congregation, and I forget what he said a word, I can't remember it off the top of my head. It was like a sigh of relief that it was over, but he was in this beautiful suit, and he turned to the congregation with a huge smile on his face. And the people that were in the congregation knew that it was special, knew that it meant something to him. At what level? It's not up to us to determine what level. It's the understanding that our children have for these events. It's up to them to show us that they understand. And I think, not to be the rabbi here, but the lesson I'm sure we all see in this congregation is that everybody, no matter what their disability, can provide that lesson to their community.
On that note, I'm going to sit down.
As the parent of a child with Down syndrome, I feel like I'm part of a joke. There were two Jews and a Catholic. And when my son was... thank you. I share with Doug, you know, unless it touches your life, and we as parents, we have the same hopes, dreams, fears, whatever, that anybody has who has a child. And if we are part of a faith community, we want our children to participate and partake of the same rites and the same rituals. And as Doug said, you know, it's not really up to us to say, well, do they really get it? Do they really understand any of that? And in our case, I'm Catholic. My husband was not raised with any religion. Our son is baptized. And when he was about 9 years old, some friends said, well, when is he going to make his first communion? And traditionally in the Roman Catholic faith, you make that about 7 or 8 years of age in second grade. And I said, well, I don't think he's going to get it. And she said, well, you should go talk to your priest. Well, okay, I'll go do that. So I went and talked to the pastor, and he said, we'd love to have Daniel do this. And I said, Father, I'm not sure he's going to understand all of this. And he said, and so you are the deciding person on what he understands and what he doesn't? well, I'm his mother, so I said, no, you're correct. I'm not the one who can tell what he gets and what he doesn't get. He said, we would love to have Daniel be a part of this. So Daniel went through the classes. Did he get everything? I don't know, but I know that there were other kids in his class who didn't get everything either, which I venture to say probably happens more times than not. He got to do one of the readings at the church during the service. And, you know, as Doug said, and what we want is for our children to be accepted and to be accepted as they are and what they're able to do and what they're not able to do. My son's speech is nowhere near Lior's in the film. And so when he spoke, no, I mean, my husband and I could understand him because we live with him and he knows, we know what he's trying to say. So whether it's, you know, Daniel saying part of a verse or it's Avi doing it in sign language or if the message is that it's something that they communicate through pictures, you know, if we choose as parents to be part of not only the greater world but also our faith community, we look for our faith community to, again, accept our children, and if they make noises and if they're different and if they talk different and they look different and all that, who's to say that they're not anymore I don't know if worthwhile, that's not quite the right word, but they have just as much they should be there just like anybody else. And I think what, you know, what my son has taught us, especially me, is number one, I can't control everything, and that's a very hard lesson for me to learn, and I continue to learn it every day. And what Daniel teaches me is that he's going to do things when he's ready to do things, and I can't push him. I can't yell at him. Well, I can, but it doesn't do any good. So those of you with typically developing children, it's the same thing. You can't yell at them because they're still not going to do it. He does things. And, you know, Lior prayed. Daniel has goes to church, and when he and I go up for communion, again, my husband's not Catholic, so he turns around and goes like this to my husband, which is the sign that even though my husband knows he's not supposed to take communion, you got to put your hands up here so you can get the blessing from the priest. You know, we go every Sunday, and every Sunday he turns around to Joe and does the sign, and, you know, my husband signs yes. You know, I get it, Daniel. I'll do it. But so Daniel knows the rituals, and Daniel reads out of the hymn book, and he reads out of his prayer book. He reads prayers, you know, better than, sad to say, my husband and my Joe, than I do. But what the film, I think, shows is that what that family wanted was for their child, and even the mom before her passing, and the stepmother, and the father, and the brother, and the sister, this was their brother, their son, their sibling, and they wanted the same things for Lior that they had, and that they had the opportunity to take part in.
And I think from that circle of family, what was amazing in the movie and what is a lesson for all of us is our role as a community. The whole movie was about the strength that the community can give a family, an individual. And I think sometimes we miss that part. And I think children like Lior or Avi or Daniel, those are the people actually that raise the level of sensitivity in our houses of worship. We Jews are going to enter into a season of the days of repentance. And there is a wonderful Hasidic story of a synagogue on the evening of the Day of Atonement, where all the members of the congregation were praying and asking forgiveness, and the rabbi felt that none of the prayers is reaching heaven, and then a child that was there took out of his pocket a flute or a whistle and made a very, very sharp noise. And at that moment, the heaven opened and the prayers were accepted. And I think this is what this movie is all about. It's about finding individuals in our midst that are able sometimes to open doors that we are not capable of opening. It's open for... do we have some time for questions?
Sure, definitely. And if you could please just wait for either Casey and I to get to you with the mic, because Bob over here is recording, and so thanks. Any questions? Rabbi, do you know what kind of Judaism they practiced? Or I wasn't...
We were trying to figure that out.
No. Yeah. You know, two Jews have three different ways of practicing. This was a Reconstructionist Judaism. So in addition to Reform Judaism, Orthodox Judaism, and Conservative Judaism, there is a movement that is Reconstructionist that follows the teaching of Rabbi Mordechai Kaplan, and lots of singing, a lot of different expressions of their identity. And then we have Jews that just like bagels. I mean, so there's a wide range of practices of Judaism.
I have a question just about Down syndrome. I don't know a whole lot about it. I'm wondering if you could maybe just tell us a little bit about Down syndrome. I know the father in the film had made the comment that maybe it's a form of retardation. I'm not sure if you could just talk a little bit about that.
Sure. Down syndrome is a chromosomal abnormality. We're typically born with 46 chromosomes. Most cases of Down syndrome, they're born with an extra 21st chromosome. So individuals with Down syndrome have 47 chromosomes instead of having 46. It's a developmental disability. With that disability, there's gross motor skills, so delayed in maybe sitting up, crawling, you know, rolling over, those kind of things. There's cognitive disability that also goes with it, so there's a certain degree of mental retardation. Some individuals with Down syndrome, IQ is a score at a given point in time. The IQ is over 70, 75, which, you know, there's people running around in Omaha driving cars with IQs above 70 or 75, but all that to down to maybe about 24 or 25. But even that IQ, all that tells you is that when the children, the individuals are given a test, they score this way for, you know, maybe verbal, but maybe they're down here for spatial relationships and their speech is up here. So it just kind of puts everything together. It's the most common occurring chromosomal abnormality, occurs about one in every 733 births in the world today. So, and you pretty much know at birth. When a child is born with Down syndrome, they can do prenatal testing, and right now there's a test that can be done at about 11 or 12 weeks gestational age that has about a 91-92% degree of accuracy. It'll give you a number. The only definitive test prenatally is an amnio that'll say, yes, your child has Down syndrome, or yes, your child has spina bifida, because those are the two things that they can test for through an amnio right now. Our children, some go to college, some get married, and that's like way out of, I'm so not there, and I don't know if I'm ever going to be there, but, you know, they work at Wendy's in town. If you go to Hy-Vee, if you go to Baker's, there's individuals with Down syndrome working there. Westroads in the food court, where I used to get my hair cut, young man, late 30s with Down syndrome. He sweeps up the floor and does the towels and, you know, that kind of stuff. Some of our children, our individuals with Down syndrome, go on to post-secondary college, so are going to, you know, their version in their city of Metro Community College. So just kind of the gamut across, you know, across the spectrum. Does that answer? They play, there's a campaign that's out now by the National Down Syndrome Congress, and it's called More Alike Than Different. And when my son was born, I didn't know prenatally, you know, I thought, great, I never have to be a soccer mom, and I never have to go to another soccer game because I'm not a sports person. You know, I always try to find a pony in everything that bad that happens in life, you know, as you're dealing through it. So there's soccer for kids with disabilities, and there's baseball for kids with disabilities. My son has a camouflage belt in karate. There's basketball for kids with disabilities. You know, there's swimming. There's tons of stuff. Our sons take horseback riding together so they can ride horses. Those things I never thought were possible when my son was born about 10 years ago, because my expectation was he was going to be sitting in a corner, be 40 years old with his tongue hanging out of his mouth, because that's how I grew up. And that was my, you know, my mindset. And those were the people who I knew, who their brothers or sisters were, oops, the last ones born. You know, Catholic, you know, over 40, so, you know, grew up in the 50s. A lot of my friends had that last brother or sister. And he has done so many more things, and there's so many more opportunities, not only for my child with Down syndrome, but any child with a disability, with access to public education and the therapy and, you know, all the different things that are available now that weren't available 15, 20, 25 years ago. So, I mean, it's a great time. If you can say it's a great time, but it is to be born with a disability, because there are so many things and there are so many choices out there for our children that really weren't there a long time ago.
Yeah, I agree.
I agree with you that there's a lot of opportunities mm-hmm. in our society, but it seems to stop at the age 22 by public policy. Mm-hmm. And there's a whole issue of the aging parents mm-hmm. and the aging Downs or a person with some sort of mental retardation where there isn't the support from our society. It kind of cuts off, mm-hmm. and I don't know if there's any movement towards more policy to help these folks mm-hmm. or the aging parents in particular.
I'll speak to that a little bit. Actually, Mary and I have both been on a committee through Monroe-Meyer Institute, which has a wonderful recreation mm-hmm. department. Avi and Daniel. Mm-hmm. Yeah. They both go to a camp called Camp Monroe, and that doesn't go past 21. But they have just recently, in the last couple of years, well, they've had an adult program for years, but just recently they've gotten funded much more than they were before. And, you know, you're right. There's not much. Mm-hmm. But I think it's a growing and it's a bigger awareness. I think we all worry about what's going to happen. It used to be that when you found out your child had a disability, somebody would tell you that you had to worry about you outliving them. And now they can outlive you. Mm-hmm. That's a huge change, a sea change in that community. And I think it's a huge problem.
It is, and Doug was talking about, in fact, there's a golf tournament on Monday, September 22nd, which is a fundraiser for the Monroe-Meyer Recreation Therapy Program, and that's for adults with developmental disabilities. I mean, how many 22-year-old kids want to go with their parents to go look at material or go to the grocery store or any of that kind of stuff? I'm thinking nobody here. And for our children, probably aren't going to be able to drive a car, may or may not have the social skills and the cognitive ability to pick up a phone and call Daniel to say, hey, do you want to go to a movie tonight? So what Monroe-Meyer does, and there's another place in town, the VSP Club, they do activities for adults with developmental disabilities. What that gives when our children get older, I mean, respite for the parents, because if our adult children with disabilities are still living at home with us, you know what? Okay, I'm probably not saying anything that's not true. You know what? We're tired, and we get tired. And so, you know, it's respite for us so that our adult children can go out and have a good time, and maybe we have 2 or 3 hours to ourselves with our spouses, with our other children, you know, or just to sit alone and not do anything at all. But you're right. Some cities are better than others as far as activities for adults with developmental disabilities. I like to think that Omaha is getting there, and I think that the impetus is there and that there's enough people who have younger children who, you know, I don't want this all to end when my son turns 21 and there's nothing for him to do. And he, you know, goes to work every day and then he comes home and sits at home. You know, we don't want that. They have so much that happens during the school year when they turn 21, and then, you know, it ends. There's another organization in town that's looking at doing a housing unit for adults with developmental disabilities. And Father, maybe you want to?
Hi, I'm Father Stephen Walensky. I'm an Orthodox priest, retired, and my wife Joan, and this is Shirley McNally. and her daughter Molly and her son Patrick. And they have another young man whose name is Michael. He's 19, and he's Down syndrome, lower level, I think, than this young man. We want to tell you about the Sheltering Tree, which is something that we are working to put together even as we speak. And this will be a residence somewhere between an apartment house and a wide open kind of community. It'll be a residential community, Sheltering Tree community for young men and women, 19 on up, who will live independent lives with care and supervision as needed. It is not yet up and running, but we're working at it. We've just started. We're looking at a piece of property. We're talking to other people. We have corporate interest. The Dial Corporation is going to help us with the property arrangements. The property that we want is in Sarpy County. And so if you are people who, like Leor, you pray, you dove for Sheltering Tree, that it gets its property mm-hmm. and gets it at the right price so we can do other things. This program will not just be a place for kids, young people to live. We also want to build a program built into this where they can have a meaningful kind of life, work, the arts, music. Not far from where we want to build this program is a brand new Christian college. It's called the Nebraska Christian College. And you may have heard about it. It's down in Sarpy County, 114th Street, and south of 370. This college will be just about, a stone's throw from where the Sheltering Tree would be. And the college is interested in providing relationships with the students and the faculty for what we're going to try to do. How many kids, how many young people, how many young adults will we be able to manage? God knows. We have no idea. We know we have to start where we can start, however large or small it will be. And I'm going to ask Shirley to say something. Shirley is really she doesn't want to do this, but I'm going to make her do it anyhow. Mm-hmm. She's the spark plug behind this. She's like this other mom sitting up there, this other dad sitting up there. Like the father and the mother in the movie. It's your love and your commitment and your excitement about the possibilities for your young people that make this possible. And the most important thing that I take out of this, and I'm not sure if I heard it in the movie or I heard it in the preview or whatever, just because you have some kind of a physical or mental disability doesn't mean you don't have a soul. Mm-hmm. And this young man and your young man and your young man, you can see it. You can nearly touch it when you touch him. Mm-hmm. It just bounces out because that's the way God creates us, Rabbi. Mm-hmm. Yeah,
but totally, I totally agree.
So I want Shirley to say something. Forgive us for our commercial, but we can't resist. It's just too wonderful a moment.
Thank you for indulging us another moment. I think the important thing about Sheltering Tree and where our hearts are at is that their spiritual lives are protected. That's not always the case, and that's really important to us as we grow older and we see them going on in their lives without us, is that these things that we have tried to instill in them are carried on. And so that's what Sheltering Tree means. It's a shelter for them. It's a place where everything is recognized, from their spiritual beings, their social beings, and this is born of our family sitting around going, what are we going to do? Where is Mike going to go? What's going to happen to him? And we just started brainstorming, and we welcome you to brainstorm with us because it's in the beginning stages, but really God is moving it forward in ways we didn't expect even, and we feel very blessed with that. And so we just, you know, we'd ask you to join us in prayer or however you can. Father Roy says donations are good. But we want to see this, and of course it's available for any person, any faith. It's the protecting of those things that their families want, and part of the whole environment there of caretaking will be that a letter of intent written by the family members, those people that care the most for them, is followed their whole lives. The celebrations they want to celebrate, the religious holidays that they would be a part of, anything that would be of importance to them and has been would be continued forward, not depending upon siblings showing up and doing it, but actually the care of the people that are there. And that's why I feel we are blessed to have the Orthodox community supporting this on the board of directors and just protecting this whole vision. And so we welcome you to join us, and you'll be hearing more about us.
Wonderful.
Sure.
Thank you.
I just want to answer your question. The community in Omaha has lots and lots of things to do for adults. I'm the mother of two adult children with developmental disabilities, and their social life is far, far, far better than their mother's. the Arc of Omaha at the Ollie Webb Center has many, many activities for, I call them children, but they're adults, after school, you know, age 18, 19, 20. There's also money when your child graduates in Nebraska that follows them for all their vocational training. So they automatically get that money to get some vocational training, and there's several, I mean, there's too many, I don't want to sound like a commercial, but there's too many in Omaha that you have your pick of where you want your child to get this developmental training. And so that takes care of them not sitting home during the day. Then there's, my daughters are active in Special Olympics. They're active at the Ollie Webb Center. They're active in the Jewish Organization of Yihad. They're active in an organization called PPA that has monthly activities. Monroe Meyer is now also partners with Therapeutic Recreation in the city of Omaha. Mm-hmm. They have activities. So there's, you know, if you feel that you've outgrown some of them, there's definitely, you know, many, many activities that are for the adults. And there's also, we have many good providers in the city of Omaha that if you happen to get residential monies that could provide your residential services. My daughters are in their own apartment with 24-hour care. So you just have to be creative and think. And I've traveled around the country to many conferences, and we really are one of the better communities out there that have many, much more inclusive services.
You know, and thanks for saying that, Deb, about the ARC. One really exciting program that the ARC has is called the Ultimate Life Program, which is fabulous. It's a nominal fee, and somebody can come, trained people can come and pick up your child and take them to a movie. Your adult with a disability, take them to a movie. They, you know, if they want to go see Faith Hill at the Quest Center, get tickets. They can go and take your child there, because, you know, if you're not a Faith Hill fan or, you know, you don't want to do that stuff, why should you as a parent have to be doing that when your child is 18, 25, 30, and 35? So that is a great program that they have. They got a grant, but the Arc of Omaha has been very creative, and, you know, as money, we're all kind of trying to go for the same dollars. So what a lot of the disability organizations have been doing is kind of partnering with each other. The Y Arts, they are partnering with the Arc of Omaha and the Children's Museum to do some things for adults and teens with developmental disabilities in, I think it's September, October, and November. It's like the second or third Thursday. And we partnered with VODAC. And also, and there's another place over, the Visually Impaired, I think there was like four or five different organizations that came through to partner to do those activities. I always say, you have a child receiving special ed services, it's like it's a puzzle. And when your child first gets diagnosed, your puzzle is this big. And then as your child gets bigger and has more needs and has, you know, more wants and desires, the puzzle gets bigger. And you don't always know where all the pieces are. And unless you happen to be, you know, somebody, there's not a book. That would be the thing I would love to have. There's not a book anywhere in the city of Omaha that...
You write it, I'll solve.
Okay, there you go. That says when you have a child receiving special ed services, you get this book. And it says, here's top soccer. Here's Special Olympics. Here is, you know, the Arc of Omaha. Here's right. PPA. There's none of that. That's not anywhere. So what we do as parents when we're at horseback riding together, we start talking, or if our kids are at speech and language at Monroe Meyer, we start talking, or if you're at a board meeting at the ARC, you start talking, and it's really the informal stuff that then parents, you know, start telling other parents, oh, did you know about this program? Did you know about that program? Should be a book.
Can I say one thing before we break up? And I think that what Deb said and what Mary's saying is very, very important. It's very true that there's lots and lots of these programs and stuff. I'm going to put a little pin in that bubble. There is a thing for services that's called the waiting list. Mm-hmm. And that waiting list has grown for services for people under 21 to... I don't know, 1,500 people, 2,400 people, thank you. It's huge. And if you want to lobby anything in the Nebraska state government, you find out. I can't tell you who to call right off the top of my head or anything, but it is the single most important lack of funding in the state of Nebraska. It's a huge, huge, huge problem.
You can, when your adult child with a disability turns 21 and qualifies for residential services, the waiting list is 8 years. Average. Thank you. Now you go to the top of the list if you're in a two-parent household and the one parent gets sick and there's some traumatic injury or, you know, something major life change in that household. Otherwise, average waiting list is 8 years. Think of those of you 21, 22 years old, have children that age. Do you want them living at home with you for 8 years until they get money together to move out? That's eight years average waiting list.
I see here organizations and women who are definitely going to roll their sleeves to try to resolve those kind of issues. In a country where we're going to spend $1 billion. At the elections in November, we can also find money for those kind of resources. I will finish with a poem, and if it's possible. And the puzzle brought this image to my mind. It's extremely hard to assemble pieces of puzzles now. We buy them in boxes, and there are 10,000 pieces or 20,000 pieces, and it's extremely hard. But we need to remember that none of us is born with all the pieces to our own puzzles. And most of our life we spend gathering those pieces from each other. When we offer a piece to someone else, we become messengers from high. Thank you.
You've been listening to a panel discussion which followed a screening of the 2007 documentary film Praying with Lior, directed by Ilana Trachtman. The discussion took place at Filmstreams, Omaha's nonprofit cinema. This event was co-sponsored by the National Council of Jewish Women and the Omaha Down Syndrome Parents Network. The moderator was Rabbi Aryeh Azrael of Temple Israel. The members of the panel included Mary McHale, president of the Omaha Down Syndrome Parents Network, and Doug Wolfson, a member of Temple Israel. This program was recorded by Omaha Public Radio on Monday evening, August 25th, 2008, for broadcast at this time. Special thanks to Rachel Jacobson, Casey Logan, and Jim Foyt of Filmstreams for helping to make the recording and broadcast of this program possible. Now, this is your producer and host, Bob Cote, thanking you for listening.